1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Hey, welcome to the show! Yeah, we're here. A lot to get you caught up on before we get to Josh Planos, our Tuesday guest. Josh is going to go into every NBA series, and if you're a Kentucky fan, you do not want to miss his comments on the new Minnesota Timberwolves head coach Tom Thibodeau and Karl Anthony Towns, your probable NBA Rookie of the Year. It's big that they get Thibodeau. Good track record for him. This is an up-and-coming team that is desperate to taste the playoffs. Right now, they're not even thinking championship. They just want to get in the playoffs. We'll chat with Josh about the article that he wrote about that. That's coming up in just a bit, so hang on for that. But let's get you caught up with everything else. First of all, big night at Reagan Field at Murray State University. Playing high school baseball there. The Crosstown Classic, part one of two. Chase Nelson striking out five as Murray downs Callaway County 5-2. The Tigers, they're having a terrific season. They're 15-3. The Lakers, 6-12. These teams will meet again on Thursday at Reagan Field. Carlisle County down Hickman County 11-8. Fulton City beat Gleason 16-9. Marshall County a 4-1 win over Livingston Central. Lyon County beat Trigg 2-1. Caldwell County a 6-2 win over Madisonville. It's softball. Bailey Blaine, magnificent. A three-hit shutout. Murray Blanks Tillman 4-0. Shelby Moss drove in two, had a pair of hits for the Tigers. They have a good year going, too. They're 14-7. And today it's the softball version of Crosstown Classic action. Murray plays Callaway County today at 5:30. The other game saw Fulton City beat St. Mary 7-2. Marshall County a yawner, 10-0 over Trigg County. Hickman County defeated Carlisle County 2-1. Livingston Central a 13-2 win over Hopkinsville. Madisonville beat Caldwell County 15-0. In tennis, on the boys' side, Callaway County takes 8 of 9 for Ballard Memorial, and the Callaway girls an 8-1 winner over Ballard Memorial. The Murray State men's golf team with a 297 yesterday. That's good for a share of third place at the OVC Men's Golf Championship being played in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Murray's Dustin McCormick had a 72. That puts him in third place after day one, and he's in striking distance. UT Martin's Hunter Richardson is the first-round leader at 69, followed by Jacksonville State's Daniel Pico at 70. The Gamecocks also lead the team standings at 290. Martin's three back at 293, and the Racers seven off the pace. Murray State's Jared Gosser, a 74, is in ninth. Preston French, a 76, is in 16th, round two of three being played today. Last night after round one, they had the annual awards banquet. Murray put four players on postseason teams. Seniors Preston French, Jared Gosser, and Brock Simmons. Named to the All-OVC squad, freshman Gabe Wheeler earned a spot on the All-OVC newcomer squad. One season award handed out last night for an individual. That was Belmont's Daniel Booker, named the OVC Freshman of the Year. The Player of the Year and the Coach of the Year awards will be announced after Wednesday's championship. Well, after Murray State announced Friday that sophomore point guard Kedrick Flomo would not be cleared medically, Racer fans learned Monday that junior forward A.J. Patty is transferring to Division II Minnesota State. The 6'9 forward averaged 1.7 points, 1.3 rebounds per contest in 18 games with the Racers. The totals were a far cry from his sophomore year production at Vincennes Junior College, where he averaged about 13 points, just under 8 rebounds a game for a Final Four team. The Racers also must replace freshman point guard Chad Colbreth, who announced he was transferring to John A. Logan Community College. What are the Racers doing personnel-wise? Well, Matt McMahon will be my guest. He'll be in for a chat tomorrow for a show that will air Thursday. And if you have a question, let me know. Neil Bradley on my Twitter account, and Facebook, whatever you want to do, however you want to get it to me. If you have a question, we will ask it for you. Otherwise, I'll take care of all the questions, but we'd certainly love to have your input. Murray State softball will play its final non-conference contest of the season today. They welcome Western Kentucky to Racer Field for a 4:30 twin bill. Murray State's Jessica Twaddle comes in red hot, going 8-for-13, a 6.15 average in the four games over the weekend. Today, the 9th and 10th meetings all time between these teams. Murray's lost six straight to the Toppers, who have been terrific as of late, not so much this year. Western struggling at 16-24. They've lost three straight. Murray State's lost five in a row. They are now 18-28 on the season. Earlier, it looked like a winning season was within reach, but that is starting to slip away from Murray State. Churchill Downs will host two big races in a few years. Organizers of the Breeders' Cup yesterday announced they'll run the race at the home of the Kentucky Derby in 2018. The Breeders' Cup lasted Churchill Downs in 2011. Track managers say $18 million in renovations helped bring the race back. The Arizona Diamondbacks rallied past the Cardinals last night 12-7 at Chase Field. Jeremy Hazelbaker with a home run, a triple, and he drove in three in place of Matt Holliday, who left in the third inning with a right leg cramp. Matt Carpenter also went deep for St. Louis. They're now 10-9. Matt Bowman suffered the loss. Jaime Garcia talked about his outing.
Frustrating, you know, missing by a little bit. Some pitches that I thought they were strikes, they didn't call. No excuse. Just got to do a better job than that.
Cardinals outfielder Jeremy Hazelbaker says it's disappointing to get a nice lead against Zach Greinke and blow it.
That's baseball, and that's how it goes, and things can change quick like that. And, you know, we had some, you know, good ABs. They had some good ABs, and, you know, that's kind of how things go. And, you know, just kind of leave it out on the field tonight. And, you know, again, tomorrow's a new day.
Jeremy Hazelbaker with the cliche clinic there. Cardinals manager Mike Matheny says he was hoping Jaime Garcia could pitch a little bit deeper into the game.
Thought he did a nice job of limiting the damage, and you could just see, you know, he gets into that sixth, and all of a sudden hits about that 90 pitch mark, and you can see it starting to happen in a hurry. So it was a shame we couldn't run him out there a little longer.
Second of the four-game series tonight, Carlos Martinez 3-0 for the Cardinals. He goes against Shelby Miller, the former Cardinal, 0-1. First pitch at 8:40, airtime of the night, 7:45 on WNBS. Down on the farm, Joey Gallo hit his second homer in the top of the 12th to lift the Express past the Redbirds 6-5 at AutoZone Park. Heath Wyatt gave up that solo shot and took the loss for Memphis. They will close out that four-game series tonight. How about some hockey? The Nashville Predators forced a Game 7 with a big 3-1 win over the Ducks at Bridgestone Arena. Matthias Ekholm, James Neal, and Shea Weber getting goals for Nashville. Pekka Rinne turned away 26 shots for the win. For Nashville to move on, they have to win on the road. The Wednesday matchup is at the Honda Center. And how about the Blackhawks going down to the Blues as St. Louis gets the victory by a score of 3-2. Brian Elliott making 31 saves for the Blues, who'll face the Stars in the second round. But a big win for the St. Louis Blues. Kentucky women's basketball program has confirmed that freshman forward Batule Kamara has been granted her unconditional release. She's the fifth player to bolt the program, while a sixth, Christe Rowe, was kicked off the team before the start of the season. Also Monday, assistant coach Tamika Williams-Jeter announced she'd resigned her position less than 2 weeks after Kentucky announced they weren't renewing a contract of another assistant. And Keelan Lawson is staying with the Memphis Tigers, but in a different role. New coach Tubby Smith telling the Commercial Appeal Lawson will be with the program, but he will be the director of player personnel. Lawson, the father of Memphis freshman forwards Diedrich and KJ Lawson. That has you caught up. We will take a very quick break, and in 30 seconds, Josh Planos will join me. Another winning year. Join Coach Matt McMahon and Racer Basketball for one last look at the 2015-16 season. The Murray State Men's Basketball Banquet will be held at 6:30 the night of May 2nd in the Murray Room of the CFSB Center. Celebrate the 29th consecutive winning season and outgoing seniors Jeffrey Moss, Wayne Langston, and Taryn Gilmore. Banquet tickets are available and must be purchased in advance at the ticket office or by calling 270-809-3000. For more information, visit GoRacers.com. Welcome back to the show as promised. Josh Planos, contributor with the Washington Post, joins me. We're going to talk about the NBA playoffs in just a moment, plus the injuries that are playing a big role. But before we do, one article that Josh has written over the past week concerns Tom Thibodeau, new head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and this impacts a lot of fans in our area with Karl Anthony Towns, former UK player who had a terrific rookie year, a part of that team. What do you think, and I know you explore a lot of this in the article, but what do you think Thibodeau can do to maybe turn this team, who's desperate just to get into the playoffs, into a playoff team?
Well, you know, I don't think it's hyperbole to think that this team could potentially be in the playoffs at this time next year, and I know that's obviously a pretty significant jump, especially for a team that has missed the playoffs for 12 consecutive seasons. But, you know, you look at what he did in Chicago, his first season as head coach, they jumped from 10th to 1st in defensive rating. And, again, they were playing, you know, players like Derrick Rose, who's kind of, for his entire career, been a negative defender. You know, Carlos Boozer, again, a negative defender, turned Joe Quinoa into the defensive player of the year, kind of maximized Luol Deng's potential. And right now he's working with, you know, arguably one of the youngest teams, youngest and talented teams in the NBA. Karl Anthony Towns, as you mentioned, you know, he's probably, if not already, then going to be a top 15 player in the NBA in the, you know, at least in the foreseeable future. And, you know, he's got Zach LaVine and all of these, you know, athletic wings, but I think he's got a lot at his disposal. And right now, really, the only thing holding back this Timberwolves team is its defense. And, you know, frankly, he specializes in that. They rank 27th in defensive rating this season. They ranked 30th the year before. So, you know, he really has his work cut out for him. But, you know, all signs point to him being able to, if nothing else, improve this defense. And with a talented offense that really turned the corner in the second half of the year, I think, you know, kind of the sky's the limit for Minnesota, honestly. You know, in the second half of the season, they knocked off four playoff teams on the road, four Western Conference playoff teams on the road. And I think that, you know, speaks volumes about where this team is heading. I think everybody assumed that Sam Mitchell was the guy to get the job done. You know, most of his career, his coaching career has been kind of, you know, marked by his decision to not double Kobe Bryant in the Toronto game, in which, you know, Kobe went off for 81 points. So I think, you know, maybe a lot of people don't speak too highly of his defensive prowess. But, you know, Thibodeau has kind of, you know, cut his teeth getting teams to play above and beyond their potential, particularly on the defensive end. So I would expect more of that next season in Minnesota. I think the bigger issue, however, is that, you know, he's also taking over as, you know, general manager or president of operations or whatever the title is. Essentially, he can create the roster, which is, I think, kind of an issue, because I think we've seen plenty of reasons to believe that that's not an effective approach. You know, that's a full-time job in and of itself, and, you know, you needn't look any further than what Doc Rivers did with the Clippers and, you know, kind of bringing his son on board and bringing, you know, this team that essentially didn't have a second unit for a number of years because of his decision-making. So I think that's a little bit more problematic. But as far as team chemistry, as the on-court potential goes, I think Tom Thibodeau has just a terrific group of guys to work with, and I would expect big things from them next season.
They have a lottery pick. Any idea how they're leaning to going with what they need with that pick?
You know, I think they could use some help on the wing. I think that they're still trying to figure out what they're going to do with Shabazz Muhammad, because right now he kind of plays, you know, about three different positions. He's, you know, kind of the prototypical tweener. But, you know, maybe a player like a Jamal Murray from Kentucky, I think, would be a decent fit. You know, someone who can stretch the floor, who can hit threes, who can provide scoring. The issue becomes, you know, you have Towns, who's kind of your go-to offensive presence, and you have LaVine, who's your, you know, athletic wing, and you've got Wiggins, who's, you know, obviously a scorer. So you don't want to, you know, just mash up five scorers and
right,
say, you know, go play basketball. You know, you kind of need to have a little bit of everything, which is why Ricky Rubio's development defensively this year was so big for them, because now they have a point guard who can, you know, strip opposing point guards and kind of create some scoring opportunities for the offense that way. I like what Murray does defensively, and I think that they need another three-point shooter, because Wiggins hasn't proven that he can, you know, hit a significant portion of his threes in the NBA. So, you know, a player like Murray, I think, would be a nice complementary piece, even if he is just kind of a typical scorer right now. You know, if they can get him to buy in defensively, you know, at 6'5", 6'6", or however tall he is, 6'4", I believe, you know, I think that he can provide some use for Thibodeau on the wing.
How good can Karl Anthony Towns be? Does he have top five NBA player potential in him?
I think so. I think there's no reason to assume not. I mean, he put together you know, one of the most successful rookie campaigns certainly I've ever seen. And you read these kind of think pieces about how his numbers reflect historically, and he's in conversations with Shaquille O'Neal and Hakeem Olajuwon and these all-time greats. He just spent a couple of minutes in Kentucky and then went to the pros. So he's plenty young and plenty talented, and he really showed that the Timberwolves made the right choice by selecting him, because what he did specifically in the second half of the season was just kind of remarkable. I mean, him being able to switch on pick and rolls onto Steph Curry and hang with him, which is something that nobody in the league was able to do for most of the season. Him being able to defend Hassan Whiteside, him being able to shoot from three-point range, for him to be able to finish with both hands. He just kind of has the full repertoire, and I think defensively he came a long way. I think that was the biggest issue going into the year was whether or not his defensive skills would translate. But in a defensive system that was essentially non-existent, he really kind of stood out and did just a terrific job. So top five player doesn't seem to be off the list right now. I think a lot of people see some Anthony Davis in him, which is a little concerning considering Anthony Davis's injury history. But Towns was relatively healthy throughout most of the year, so there's no reason to assume that injuries are going to take him off the court, and really the sky's the limit for him.
Speaking of injuries, grab your stethoscope. We have a bunch to talk about, including Steph Curry out at least a couple of weeks, it appears, with a knee injury. Tell us how that will impact the playoffs, especially Golden State series with Houston.
I don't think it'll affect the Houston series at all. Frankly, I'm kind of flabbergasted that Houston made this late charge to even qualify for the playoffs. This is the same roster as everyone has mentioned that was at the Western Conference Finals last year, and yet they're getting dogged by 20 plus against the Warriors without the reigning MVP, soon to be two-time MVP, and Steph Curry, and it's really kind of sad to watch. I mean, I know that they're it's easy for me to sit here and be, bench, table psychologist and just assume that they're not playing with as much heart or energy as they need to be. But really, they're just kind of playing isolation basketball, and it's frankly kind of underwhelming to watch. And so I don't think that's going to affect much of the series. Obviously, Curry will be out at least the next 2 weeks. I think people see that two-week number and assume that, as soon as those 14 days are up, that he's going to just trot back on the court and be the same Steph Curry. But he's just going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So, legitimately, I think the timeline's just a little bit longer than that. So that would probably put him in about midway through or towards the tail end of the next series, in which I don't think after last night, Chris Paul breaks his hand, at least that's what the reports are indicating. I don't think Golden State's going to have much difficulty getting through them, considering Chris Paul really does everything for the Clippers, in that he runs the show on offense. He's one of the best defensive point guards in basketball, and they don't have the kind of team chemistry nor the kind of talent that Golden State has across the board. So without Chris Paul, I don't think that Golden State will have much difficulty getting through into the Western Conference Finals. The issue becomes, once they get to the finals, likely against the San Antonio Spurs, without a healthy Steph Curry, I just don't see them, standing much of a chance. But, hopefully we can get Steph Curry back on the basketball court. Basketball is simply more fun to watch when he is healthy and at his best. And, it would be a shame to see this the 73-win team not be able to give a legitimate chance at winning a title, because their marquee player went down with an injury.
And you mentioned the injury, also Blake Griffin with a bit of a quad issue, and you get back-to-back wins with Portland. Would they be the favorite in the series now if neither of those guys can play?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think the momentum has already kind of swung. Conversely, I do think that Miami should still be favored in their series against Charlotte, and I know Charlotte's coming off back-to-back wins. The series is evened up, but as far as Portland, Los Angeles goes, that whole series is kind of marred by the number of injuries that have affected Los Angeles. I mean, for starters, Blake Griffin was not 100% going into the series, and now we don't even know if he's going to play, as you mentioned, Neil. So, you know, moving forward, I think that the kind of the unsung best narrative of the season, which is the Portland Trail Blazers, a team that nobody, you know, expected to make a playoff run, you know, is probably favored at this point at 2-2 to get into the Western Conference semifinals. And it's just kind of remarkable to say something like that because, you know, a few months ago, this was a team that didn't have, you know, that had like one or two pieces left of its starting lineup. And now, you know, Coach Terry Stotts put them in a position to be successful. Damian Lillard obviously is a stud. And moving forward, I would expect, certainly considering that Chris Paul's now out of the equation, or at least that's what reports are indicating, I would just expect Portland to get through. I think that might be where the story dies, you know, in the next round. But as far as Los Angeles being able to combat this kind of resurgent Trailblazers team without Chris Paul, one of the, you know, five best players in the NBA, or Blake Griffin, you know, one of the 10 best players in the NBA, I think that's just kind of a lofty goal and something that's not really attainable.
I watched the end of the Boston-Atlanta game. I thought for sure Atlanta was going to win that. Instead, this one deadlocked 2-2, and Boston making big shots down the stretch to force that into a series tie. How do you see this going the rest of the way?
You know, I think this is honestly the most entertaining series left, at least in the first round, because I don't know how you feel, Neil, but I really think that Isaiah Thomas is rapidly becoming one of the most entertaining players to watch.
Yes.
In the NBA, and it's not just because he's short, though, you know, everything he does is considered that much more magnificent and honestly looks that much more, you know, kind of tantalizing just because he's clearly the smallest player on any court. But what he's able to do, you know, acrobatically, you know, 360 layups, contorting his body, double clutch three-pointers, you know, he really can do it all. And it's just kind of comical, honestly, how much of a focal point he is in the Boston offense. I mean, this offense is really kind of lackluster, you know, without him. And what they did, you know, coming back from, you know, 16 points down, 18 points down in the last game was just remarkable. It was nice to see the Garden go crazy, at least over TV. And, you know, they're really, they obviously have one of the best coaches in the game. I think this series is exciting because there are two of the best up-and-coming coaches in basketball, kind of, you know, mashing heads.
Right.
And you know, Mike Budenholzer and Brad Stevens. But, you know, I would love to see Thomas go off, you know, at least another time this series and give Boston the chance because, you know, they're kind of playing with a lopsided deck right now without Avery Bradley, who Damian Lillard earlier in the season called the best perimeter defender in the NBA. So, you know, obviously losing a player like him, not just for his defensive abilities, but for what he brings to Boston's ability to space the floor. He's probably their best three-point shooter, at least in terms of percentage. Without him, I think what Boston's been able to do to stay competitive in the series has really been you know, kind of incredible. And I would expect Atlanta to get through. After saying all that, I would expect the Hawks to make passage into the next round. But, you know, it's certainly been an exciting series, and I really felt like the last two games were wrapped up and Boston, you know, made me eat crow about it. So, you know, the same could be true for the next few games.
Indiana-Toronto, this series also tied 2-2, and all the games have been decided by double digits, but each team has a win on the other's floor. How will this one end?
I think this is the year Toronto gets over the hump. I really thought that after game one was lost, that was, you know, perhaps an early nail in the coffin of the series, just because, you know, you look at what Toronto's done the past 2 years in the playoffs, you know, put together these terrific runs and then just completely bottomed out in the first round. But, you know, I think this team is much deeper than teams in previous years. I think Damari Carroll's starting to find his groove. I think what's interesting is, you know, we talk about a league going small and small ball kind of taking over the NBA, but Jonas Valanciunas has been probably the marquee player for Toronto this series. He leads, I believe, all playoff players in rebounds per contest. you know, had 18 in the first game and has really kind of come into himself in this series, and that he's taking apart, you know, young guys like Miles Turner, players like Jordan Hill and Ion Rahimi. But I think that this is also an exciting series in for different reasons. Sometimes it kind of feels like it's the first person to 80 points wins, just because of how defensive-minded these two rosters are. But I think you know, they're going to need DeMar DeRozan to play well moving forward in order for them to get the series win. Right now, he's been really struggling with the length of Paul George, who's just kind of a stud on both ends of the floor. So I still think it's going to be Toronto. I think it's going to be a close series. It could go seven games, and you know, I guess we'll just kind of wait and see.
The other series, which will begin Saturday, will be San Antonio going up against Oklahoma City. They get 4 days off before they have to play. Does either team benefit more than the other with the time off?
I think it's San Antonio, frankly. I mean, they obviously were able to get the sweep as opposed to, you know, Oklahoma City needing to go five games. And furthermore, only Kawhi Leonard averaged more than 30 minutes a game for San Antonio in that series. And even then, he barely did that. So I think right now San Antonio, as is always the case, is probably the most well-rested team in the postseason, which means quite a bit. And also probably one of the deepest, if not the deepest, roster left in the playoffs. And so I would expect San Antonio to not make light work, but I really expect San Antonio to get out of this series in five games. And I'll tell you why. It's because I don't think anyone in their right mind would be confident in the Oklahoma City Thunder in the fourth quarter. And me and you have talked, you know, time and time again this year about, you know, the defensive lapses, the you know, self-combustion,
right,
of the Thunder in the final 12 minutes. And it's really been, you know, kind of an issue for months now, and it's never been corrected. It came back to bite them in the first round against Dallas. And until those issues get sorted out where they can put together, you know, four consecutive games of tough fourth quarter action, I really don't think that they stand much of a chance. Also, there's something to be said about how good the Spurs are.
Yeah.
You know, this is a historically great team that won, you know, 67 games this season. So clearly they're doing something right. But at the same time, you know, the Spurs, I believe, were second in fourth quarter net rating, which is essentially the margins of fourth quarter games this season. And Oklahoma City was in the bottom 10. So I really think that that's going to be pivotal, especially in the playoffs, where every possession matters, particularly when you get into crunch time. So I would expect the Spurs to advance, but it should be an exciting series nonetheless.
Great stuff as usual from Josh Planos. Josh, thanks a lot. Hopefully next week you can leave your stethoscope at home, all right?
Sounds great. I'll plan on it.
All right, thanks a lot. Josh Planos, my guest today. Coming up on tomorrow's show, Ed Marlowe of the Paducah Sun will join me. We will talk Murray State sports and high school sports on tomorrow's show.